1st. We will open the work session to put this on the record, and then we'll look at some numbers. But I urge you not to look at the numbers until we absolutely positively have to get there. Just hate those issues. In the discussions of the ESD task force recommendations and in the descriptions and discussions of the budget, a couple of facts have emerged, and let's look at those under the heading of funding. And we have a number of these outlines available for others who wish to follow along. Governor's budget and the Ways and Means co-chairs have allocated $161.8 million in fiscal year 2001 and '02, and $169.6 million in fiscal 2002 and '03 for ESD funding. So there isn't a lot of argument about the size of the pie. There are some budgeted increases for enrollment growth and inflation that create about $9 million in additional funds in the '01-'02 biennium and the '02-'03 biennium, and we could use those increases to fund equity adjustments. And that's somewhat at the crux of the 260 issues and the recommendations that we received from the task force. After looking at all the different permutations, the chairman is going to recommend that we accept many of the recommendations from the ESD task force and apply those in the following manner. The idea of bringing or setting a minimum funding for the ESD districts at $750,000 for the '01-'02 biennium and $1 million for the '02-'03 biennium follows the recommendations of the ESD task force to set a floor under the lowest fund of the ESD, so that we solve some of the equity issues in that direction. And that would cost us $0.9 million of the $9 million that's available. We heard that many of the ESDs that had greater revenues available simply want to be held harmless. And so if we freeze the funding that is above the state average per student, and looking at a hold harmless theory, use either the greater of the prior year total dollars or the ADMW dollars per student to find out what that greater amount is, that would hold harmless all those ESDs above the state average at a cost of $1.2 million of the nine that we have to distribute on an equity basis. We could allocate the remaining budget increases of the $9 million that we have to the ESDs that are funded below the state average per student, and that would be a biennial revenue use of about $6.8 million. And then we'd follow the interim task force recommendations for allocations below the state average per student. Now, what that does is it, in the hold harmless equation, what we're really suggesting that we do is we recognize that Grant and Wallowa have an anomalous antique distribution formula that doesn't really compare to anybody else. And rather than wade into that issue in this bill, or perhaps even in this legislative session, accept the fact that they have arrived at that formula and that they believe in fact that it's equitable. Also, there's a couple of districts that have relatively high tax bases, and this is a local tax base they voted on themselves. And this would include North Central ESD, and the other community is Harney County. And those also exist sort of as anomalies and outside of the norm. If we hold those harmless and sort of take them out of the equation, then you're really looking at a distribution formula above and below the averages. And we tried to deal with moving everyone up on the equity scale that is below that average. And we hope what that does, in fact, is demonstrate that we are moving toward equity in ESD funding. It is an interim step. It is along the lines of the recommendations that were made by the task force to the committee. Now, specifically to the issue of the relatively high series of disequities that were discovered when we looked at all the numbers, you could see that Northwestern ESD has the largest funding adjustment, since it was one of those issues that was a serious problem.
Deschutes was the...
Well, Crook Deschutes is the lowest funded, so they're going to come up the greatest. I think it was almost a 30% change in the allocation.
That was in the Dash 2 plan.
Okay, but we've
not the most substantial.
Nevertheless, we have looked at the biggest disequities and applied the most adjustment to the largest disequities first. And what I'll do now is I'll ask Steve to walk us through these numbers. I'm sure at great peril to the process. Actually, let me hold off on that. There were some other issues that I think that fell into the category of administration. First of all, under administration, we adopt the interim task force recommendations as they are. And that would be in recognition that we already dealt with the issue of forced consolidation and permissive consolidation and some other issues in another Senate bill, Senate Bill 259. We are in recognition of Senator Minnis's concerns and other people's concerns about ESDs being a market-driven feature. We'd like to add some language into the bill that requires ESDs to show their competitive bid contract process or to demonstrate that they are being market-driven by the needs of students and school districts. And to that end, I may wish to have Mr. Campbell and others come up and talk about how school districts and ESDs actually have evolved to serve the needs of students, how they're connected in the delivery of those services, and how services that are needed that are neither provided by the school district or the ESD have contracted. I think knowing those features will help us clarify what it is that we are really after in terms of demonstrating market drivers and making that process public so that school district patrons and parents can see that there's some market drivers going on. And then finally, we have been talking throughout the consideration of Senate Bill 260 about asking the task force to continue on in another role during this interim to help us create a comparable definition of services that are offered by ESDs and school districts so that legislators and public policymakers can look at the suite of services and determine for themselves what services are actually being offered as opposed to what they're being called in various documents and budgets. Then we need, in addition to this catalog of services offered by ESDs and school districts that feature common definitions, we need to correlate those services to a uniform chart of accounts so that public policymakers can look at what's being spent on what services and determine by that process if there's gaps in the system of service delivery. And this gives us a basis for comparison of equity by services rather than just by ADMW. And that's a feature that's been missing from this discussion. And then with the chart of accounts that's uniform and the service delivery definition that's comparable, you can begin to do gap analysis and find out if there's deficiencies, those might be actionable. And the whole purpose of our exercise in 260 is to create better equity in the ESD funding program and equity possibly defined not only by ADMW but also by services. So that's a mouthful. That's what we're going to try to accomplish in Senate Bill 260. Let's look at probably the most important feature, and that will be, first we'll look at how the revenue gets distributed, then we'll look at the interim task force recommendation and the market drivers. Finally, we'll talk about the charge to the task force. So, Steve?
Mr. Chair, members, you have a table labeled Simulation 3. The basic assumption behind this is that the state school fund is funded at the governor's recommended level, and that the split between K-12 and ESD is in the governor's budget. But what the numbers are trying to do here is to take the task force approach primarily for those ESDs below the average after putting into effect the other constraints. So if you, and it still includes for Grant and Wallowa County those equalization dollars. The numbers in the 2001 year have not changed from what you saw the last meeting on this bill. For 2001-2002, you can, the base revenue amount is simply the amount from 2000-2001 per student times the ADMW in 01-02. So that's a base amount on the prior year, either on a per student basis, calculated as I described, or on a total dollar basis. So that's how you arrive at the base revenue within those two constraints, those two hold harmless provisions. The next column is the target revenue. This takes all of the state and local dollars available and runs them through the K-12 equalization formula so that you have a regional distribution of that total by district. And then you take 5% of the school districts within an ESD and sum them up for the targeted revenue for DSD. So it goes back to the task force concept of 5% of the district funds should be available to the ESD. So that's how the target is arrived at, rather than on a per student basis as we were looking at the last meeting. The revenue gap then is the difference between the base and the target. So if you go down the list, you can see the zeros where the base revenue within those hold harmless constraints does not create a revenue gap. For the other districts, then, the revenue that's available for those districts is used to narrow the gap. And the percentage of the gap that's funded is almost 17%. So if you take about 17% of the gap amount and add it to the base amount for those districts that have a gap, then you'll get the revenue dollars in the revenue column. And then that's simply factored out on a per ADMW basis, and then that per ADMW number for 0102 is compared to the prior year for the gain shown in the last column on the far right.
Okay, let's try to do a narrative explanation here, and actually I'd like to call forward Mr. Campbell and company for some other discussions here. I see your cohorts are anxious to join you at the table, Mr. Campbell. That's heartening. Mr. Campbell, you had at the end of the last presentation of Senate Bill 260 an interesting observation, and that was that the formula that Steve had presented was not far from the formula that the task force had arrived at with its work over 2 years, and I think it was a relatively small difference. At the end of that meeting, I think you met with Steve, and maybe you could recap the discussions that you had at that point.
Thank you, Senator. For the record, my name is David Campbell. I'm superintendent at Clackamas Education Service District, and basically the point that we discussed last Tuesday was that there was a value in maintaining a connection between the ESD funding and the K-12 funding, and the 5% target provided a means to do that over time so that the differences that were being addressed in the funding plan would actually follow a logical mathematical path to some ultimate point out there where some forms of equalization could be realized. And so the numbers that Steve has shared this morning reflect that difference in the way the target is established, which ties ESD funding back to a portion of the total alongside with K-12, so that over time we can look at how those pieces fit together in a total sense. And that was the main thing that we, through the task force work that and the funding subcommittee, we thought was the most important element that we could come to, and that is that we don't look at ESD funding as a separate issue from the K-12 clients they serve, but rather we create a plan that puts them in concert with one another, and then the determination becomes, you know, what that relative proportion should be. And so the material that Steve Meyer shared with you this morning reflects that direction again. The task force had a much shorter time frame for getting to full equalization than this would reflect, but it still is in the same conceptual model.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Castillo?
So the timeframe under the recommendation from the task force was 4 years, is that
right? That's correct.
And this one, we went, how long would it take us to reach equalization under this scenario?
Mr. Chair, Senator Castillo, I have not had an opportunity to work with this paper, so I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
And I think, Senator Castillo, in the answer to your question, we're trying to move in a two-year period with a direction set clearly for the 4 years. So we're not going to achieve the objectives of equalization in a two-year period.
No.
Probably not even in a 4-year period, but we'll probably step as we go closer to equity as we move through the biennia. And I guess the point is that if this formula works well for most people, and we think that it does, there are some anomalies in it that will be carried forward, but it still steps toward equity over time. And if we remember, the courts, I think, gave us a decade to get to equity in the school funding formula for ADNW, and we ended up getting there in far shorter period of time. I would assume that we would try to keep that kind of a model. So when we were under a court order to support equity, mm-hmm. we were given a longer period of time to do that. But
mm-hmm.
obviously the courts didn't expect us to be able to move more quickly than the resources were available to do that. But we ended up getting there a lot quicker than the period that was granted by the court. In any case, the other issue that I thought was very interesting and that was shared with me earlier today was that the school or the ESDs that are above the median had an observation about what would be possible or what they would be able to live with in this equity formula. Maybe you could share that with the committee.
Again, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. There have been a number of discussions, and the point you made earlier that the higher funded ESDs have expressed that flat funding for them would be compared certainly to the task force recommendations would be a much better scenario for them and one that they could actively support. I suspect that all of those ESDs above the mean would enthusiastically support a flat funding model as opposed to the task force recommendation, which had them approaching the middle over a 4-year period. So I think there would be support for what Mr. Meyer has presented this morning from those that are above the mean.
Thank you. I think that helps a little.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr?
Contrary-wise, those that are furthest below the mean are getting a 17% adjustment straight across, regardless of how far they are below the mean. Doesn't help my district and in approaching the average, even as well as the offering of our last meeting. There's a lot of people in this audience that would be very put upon if we went this route.
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, may I respond? This is, again, a difficult issue for me to address. I'm kind of in the middle at Clackamas. The concept of using 5% of the regional funding as a target, I think over time, is a huge advantage to both ESDs and K-12. So using this concept that says K-12 and ESDs are viewed as a composite whole, and a certain portion of the regional money goes through the regional provider and a certain portion goes directly to the school districts, whatever that proportion might be, I think helps create the strong connection between the ESDs and the school district clients. The one thing that does happen, if you look carefully at those numbers, you will see that by using the 5% as the target, even though that increase is less than the task force had recommended, it is still on a proportionate scale. For example, if you look at Clackamas, where we are the closest to the middle, closer than the others that are below to the 5% target. Our increase is very minimal compared to Northwest, for example. They get a much higher percentage of increase because they're lower to start with. And that was built into the 5% target, that it mathematically it creates that. So while what you're looking at is a bit different from what you looked at Tuesday, there is still a proportionate allocation of the resources that with the most going to the least funded and so on up the scale, because the 5% target builds that in.
In real terms, Senator Starr, that it probably doesn't look like much in real terms, but the fact is that when you look at these allocations and throw out the anomalies, Northwestern with a $20 per student increase is the one of the largest percentages of increase that we have, and that we intended to do that. But the question is whether it's far enough, fast enough, is one that we can talk about also. And I think that's probably the issue.
Very much.
Let's discuss any other questions we have about these numbers and then go to the issue of administration and then the task force activity. I think we end up coming back to these numbers before we're finished. On administration, in general terms, we were going to adopt as many of the interim task force recommendations that were left on the table. But the two issues that were left was, are ESDs market-driven, and how can we demonstrate that there's accountability in the market-driven processes? And to that end, I asked Mr. Campbell to discuss how is it that school districts currently negotiate with ESDs for services that are delivered, and perhaps we can just touch on that for a minute.
Thank you, Senator Farrelly, and members of the committee. This is an interesting issue because ESDs actually operate under two different realms in this arena. The first is what we call the resolution process, and let me just take a minute to describe again for you how the resolution process is statutorily driven to work. And I will share with you how it does work in my ESD because I can speak most knowledgeably about the organization where I currently work. Resolution process states that of the general fund revenues that an ESD, where an ESD provides programs, that two-thirds of the school districts representing a majority of the students must approve those programs before they can be paid for out of the general fund. What that means is in Clackamas County we have 10 school districts. The school boards of 7 of those districts representing over half the students must support a program in order for us to pay for it out of our general fund. In order to come to a conclusion about what things we ought to provide, I go through a series of meetings every fall with the superintendents in small groups. I take what the superintendents recommend to our board. They create then the plan that goes out to all of the local school district boards, and the local school district boards vote and approve or not that slate of programs. In addition to that process, we also provide programs under contract to our school districts, and there we are in a market economy. We're in a market-driven operation. If the schools can buy a particular program or service at the quality they need and want for a better price elsewhere, they go elsewhere to get it. If they can't, they may come to the ESD to get it, and I'll give you a quick example. In Clackamas County, we provide a program for young people with severe behavioral issues who are still able to function in a public school setting, but they can't function within an ordinary regular classroom. The schools have requested us to provide programs for them to serve those youngsters. But we don't do that out of our resolution process or the general fund. We do that on a contract basis because some schools have greater need for that than others. And so they create a contract with us to buy that service from us. They could go elsewhere to buy it, but they choose to buy it from us because of what we bring to the table. There are other instances where we actually do create a bid list of products that schools can purchase. We go through the process of that. We send out the RFP for bids and then create a contract with providers outside in the private sector for the school districts to purchase directly from whatever the items are. And we do this primarily in electronic equipment, computers, VCRs, those kinds of things. So we operate in both a general fund model using the resolution process, and then we also contract with our districts directly for certain things, and then we create opportunities for them to buy from other sectors through some of the RFP and bid work that we do on their behalf.
And we referred to that as a product of reconciliation, or what was the terminology that you'd used earlier?
Well, there's the resolution process, there's the direct contracting that districts do with us, and then there are those instances where we create opportunities for them to purchase from other sectors, but where we've done the logistical work for creating the RFP, reviewing the bid list or whatever it might be, whether we go in an RFP process or a bid process.
I think the question for me and others might be, how do patrons and parents see that process as transparent? How is it demonstrated? I mean, is that all done in the public hearings at the school district level or the public hearings at the ESD level? How are patrons of the district and the ESD to see that process, know that it's a market driver, and have evidence that the choices that were made were based on considerations? How is all that disclosed to people? How can people track that process?
There are, again, I'll use my own organization as an example. We create an annual report which we provide our local school districts, which identifies every single program and the extent to which that program is used by each of the districts. I go out to each local school district board meeting in the fall and deliver those reports and walk our client school boards through that report. Share that information also with their audience of patrons that are present at the time. And so there's a concrete report that they get in their hands that I present to them in that mode. The other work that I do is more directly with the superintendent group, as we have done cost studies of the kinds of things that we do, and I have shared back with our superintendent group a comparison of the prices that it costs us to provide a particular program or service compared to what they can pay for it in the private sector. And we have had instances in the past where we believe that school districts could do better elsewhere and have told them so. In the instances where we think that we can do better, we show them that. So we really, it's a total open book for us. All of the things that we do are subject to the review of our superintendent group, subject to review of the local school boards, and we go out of our way to make sure that when we report to the local school board, we do it in a way that the community patrons who are there are also able to observe. And one of the things that is true in Clackamas County is that a number of the school boards have their board meetings on public cable channels, so that our patron access then is expanded tremendously even beyond the boardroom.
I think the concern that we've heard expressed is that we are able to demonstrate that we've got a market-driven system. Many people are questioning the need for ESDs at all. They hold up models of other states that say, geez, you know, are ESDs really serving? In other states, they have far fewer ESDs that serve far greater territories and populations. That was the topic that we discussed in the ESD report that you brought forward, the numbers of ESDs mm-hmm. and how they're organized. Other people see ESDs possibly as being adjunctive services to school districts, and perhaps if we just gave all the money to the school districts and let them choose services wherever they would find them, yes, some ESDs would certainly be the purveyor of choices for school districts, and others might not. So I guess I'm trying to get at those questions. How do we surface those issues and make sure that what we're allocating actually is buying the best suite of services that are delivered to students? You know, how do people know that, and how do public policymakers know that?
Senator Farrelly, members of the committee, that an interesting thing that I did in 1999, some of you may recall that Representative Ken Strobeck's bill in 1999 called for all the state money to go directly to the local school districts as opposed to being distributed to ESDs. And I had been here, it might not surprise you to know that I had been here suggesting that there was a better plan than that, and that I thought ESDs ought to continue to be funded. But one of the things I wanted to do was find out if what I was suggesting was in keeping with what my own school districts might want. So I put that issue on the agenda of our superintendent group in Clackamas County. And here's how I posed the question to them. I said that I had been testifying in Salem in opposition to Mr. Strobeck's bill that would send the state money directly to the school districts, but I needed to know what my superintendent wishes were on that topic. And if they requested that I change my testimony, I would do it. If our superintendents in Clackamas County believed they would be better served by having the money go directly to them as opposed to going to the ESD, then that's what I would support. I had a 10-0 vote in favor of continuing to support the ESD funding come through the ESD. I share that story with you because the first superintendent who spoke said, it doesn't make sense to run it through the school districts and then have to contract back to the ESD for the things you already provide. Because then what we would have is a series of layers of contracting that we would have to do, whereas right now we have a simple process where we come to an agreement about what those programs will be, and you provide them. We would be asking for the same exact programs under a contract arrangement, and then we would probably have to add staff to manage the contracts that would then be required. And so the vote was 10-0 to support the current model.
Senator Muniz?
Sir, do you think that you ended up with that result because you asked the same people who have the same vested interest in achieving the same existing result as opposed to thinking outside the box and maybe had the option or the opportunity to go somewhere else other than your ESD to get the services provided? You seem to have gone to the very same people that have the same vested desire. Did you go to the constituent groups, the parent groups?
Senator...
Employees, perhaps? The people who teach in school?
Senator Maness, the group... we have several groups with which we work in Clackamas County. The group that I work with directly are the school superintendents. We also have advisory committees that are made up of some teachers, some principals, some central office staff across the different programs we provide. We ask the same kinds of questions there.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator.
I'll make this one comment. When the superintendent of public instruction, Mr. Bunn, was serving with me in the legislature, he seemed to be very capable of thinking outside of the box on a regular basis, very innovative. And now that he's sitting as the superintendent of public instruction, for some reason, everybody's all together on the same page, and all of those people who are in this group of managers within the education system, for whatever reason, are incapable or unwilling to think innovatively. And I'm surprised at that.
I'm Senator Barr.
To Senator Minnis' point, I think that that's not beyond what you would expect.
My point, though.
If you were to create it the other way for them to buy services, I suspect you'd get the same result because it's the same people who would be making those decisions are going to be superintendents with the concurrence of their school boards.
But see, the point I'm making is the school boards at the local level are elected officials who come hopefully from the parent groups. Those people have an interest in making sure that the quality of the services provided within the district are, in fact, their quality services. And if they're given options, and if options exist, they may be able to make different choices. What I'm saying right now is there are no different choices.
Senator Farrelly, Senator Menas, there really are other options, but what I can demonstrate in Clackamas County is that that the school districts will be less well-served choosing some of the other options. I don't say that just because I would like that to be true. We've run the numbers. I've required our staff to do time studies, to do fiscal analysis, and find out what the true cost is for us to deliver a particular program or service. I'm not talking about what we do or don't charge the districts. I'm talking about total true cost, so that they can take a look at, in terms of the public interest, what these things really do cost for us to provide them versus what another entity could provide them for. I do go meet with the local school boards when I do the annual report review.
I'm really not discounting the fact that you guys do this stuff, and I guess maybe I don't want to sound as terse as I am. I guess what I'm really trying to say is that to the extent that you can include some process by which people are making decisions toward the quality of services and providing options, I think where you have a free market approach, that you're better served, your constituent groups are better served, as opposed to the same people. I mean, if you ask the people that I work with in the police department, should we change the way we do business? The vast majority of people are going to say, absolutely not. I like it exactly the way it is. And that's just that's the result you're going to get. And so what I'm saying is that I'm not convinced that in the community in education, and I'm not an educator, so I'm truly ignorant on this, I suppose, except that I'm a consumer of the product, that I see the environment for education in our world changing, and that applies to both higher education and K-12. The environment in which we're going to be receiving educational products is changing, but I'm not sure that the institutions of education, whether it's ESDs or K-12 or the university system, is changing to move along with that, because we have institutions within that system that are protecting their turf, so to speak, from my perspective, and it could be wrong. So please understand what I'm trying to do. I'm really not trying to tear down the system. I'm trying to say, look, are we doing the very best we can to bring choices to that environment, to think innovatively, so that we're creating an education system that is adaptive, that's flexible, that's capable of meeting the needs of our students. Because I see us still teaching things, you know, like education, we're like language. We're teaching, you know, second language courses in high school, where we know that, doggone it, kids learn much faster, you know, at the younger ages. But I just don't see us doing that kind of stuff. We're still stuck in the same modality that we've been in for years and years and years. With the exception of my school district, Reynolds School District, of course, and HUD Lasher.
Senator Menace, I like your comments because, actually, those are exactly the same kinds of comments that I make to my staff on a regular basis. I agree with you that in this whole business of education, that the challenges that we face, and I say this now as with my educator hat on, not just an ESD superintendent, but from my whole concept of public education, that the challenges we face are such that we have to be able to think outside the box. I totally agree. And I challenge our staff on a regular basis to do that. Do we get there totally? Probably not. But I believe that we are, in fact, attempting to do the kinds of things that you describe. Find new and better ways that we address the needs and interests of our school districts in ways that then turn around and help them do a better job with the children they directly serve. I agree totally with your direction, and I think that we are, in fact, poised to be able to do that. Not at 100%, certainly. There's lots of room for us to improve, but that's the direction we're trying to go.
Mr. Campbell, I think Senator Miss is essentially trying to get us to a place that you are indicating exists in most cases already. And that is to say that you do the analysis with your customer base, which is the school district folks,
mm-hmm.
to try to configure the services that you know they're going to need and want. And you go out and find those services or package those services or RFP for those services so that they have access to a suite of services at a reasonable cost, providing reasonable selection and choice. And I guess at the risk of sounding like a math teacher, prove your work. How do I show that this is happening? How do we demonstrate that to parents and patrons in a systematic way? you're saying, well, it's, okay, it's in there. You know, it's in the process, it's in the public contracting process, it's in the deliberations at the school board level and at the district level. I guess what I'm hearing Senator Minnis say is that that market-driven connection ought to be even more apparent than it is, or maybe there needs to be a reporting process to the legislature, or maybe there needs to be another feature that guarantees that what happens as a matter of course at your ESD is systemic across, you know, all ESDs. So, you know, wherever possible, they're market-driven, cost-effective choices that are transparently arrayed and demonstrably selected. And I guess what I'm looking for is a mechanism to assure that that is exactly what's happening. And I think that's the kind of market-driven stuff that Senator Minnis wants us to get to.
Yeah. Senator Farioli, let me make one more comment about that. In the funding subcommittee that was created out of the task force, there were two ESD superintendents, two K-12 superintendents, and then a number of other folks who are expert in this, in the arena of school funding. Within that group, they had heard stories from some areas that K-12 superintendents and others were not satisfied that they had played a strong enough role in the very thing that Senator Minnis describes, in this determination of really what ought to be provided, that needed to be addressed. That group came to a conclusion that by creating a requirement that 90% of the allocation to the ESDs from state and local property taxes would be subject to the resolution process would get at that from that part of it. And when Robert Stevens, who is a university-based person but who has done probably more research in regional service systems than anyone else in this country, came to Oregon to speak to the task force, he described the Oregon resolution process as the best he has seen anywhere in this nation to protect both the interest of the large district through the requirement of the majority of the students to be represented in the decisions, and the protection of the small districts because of the requirement that two-thirds of the districts had to support a program for it to be delivered. His advice was make sure that across all the ESDs that the resolution process is embraced and fully implemented, because he described it as the best that he had seen in the country.
So you think the resolution process is what gets people, especially legislators and the public, to be able to judge for themselves whether public funds are being spent to the best advantage? I think that it demonstrates.
I believe it does.
Is the resolution process universally applied, or is it only, you know, being used in a few places? Is it a new concept?
It's not a new concept. It has been in the statute. There have been different interpretations about how much of the program delivery was subject to the resolution process, and the task force recommendations clarified that question and said 90% of the allocation would be subject to that process to make sure there was no misunderstanding about the intent.
And if this committee were to adopt the recommendation that 90% of the allocations are subject to the resolution process, what kind of a burden would that put on the ESDs?
I won't try to speak for each. I will tell you that at Clackamas, we already exceed that.
Senator Minnis, would such a consideration get at your concerns about whether or not these issues are being... That the use of public funds is being demonstrably expended to the best advantage? Or is it some other driver that we're looking at?
You know, it's much bigger than that, in a sense. I'm looking at Reynolds School District, you know, which is what I represent. But they're one of three high schools in the nation that's receiving a presidential award for being a top high school. And I've been there, and I've looked at what they've done. And they're very, very innovative. And they're very adaptive in terms of meeting the needs of students. And Hud Lasher and the principal at Reynolds, I'm forgetting his name right now. When I talk with those guys, they think about how can we do this differently? How can we better serve the needs of our students? And they have an attitude, and it really is an attitude, of how can we do better with what we've got, and how can we be more innovative to meet the needs of our community? That's really what I'm trying to, I guess, get to, is how can we instill that kind of spirit, that attitude, into those people within the education community who we really trust to be the innovative thinkers out there, as opposed to the protectionist kind of modality that says, look, it's my job. I have to protect my job. I have to protect my interest here to make sure that I'm continuing in my employment, as opposed to thinking, how are we really doing justice here? Now, I want to go back to the fellow, and I don't remember his name, that represented the Hispanic community, that talked about some of the shortfalls of teaching ESL and IEP classes and how kids are classified in IEP. What I'd really like to see is something that comes out of this group that says, you know, doggone it, we are having some problems. We are making some mistakes. And here's our proposal for how we're going to do that. You know, and I guess that's what I'd like to see at some point, as opposed to just simply arguing some very simple, abstract kind of a very simple little thing like, well, we all have to be paid the same, and somehow that inherently is going to provide us with the ability to do what we're doing. I'd like to have the bigger argument, the bigger discussion, because I've told, as a conservative Republican here who's voted both mostly against taxes, but I've also voted for them, that if you show me your work, I'll support you. But if you don't, all you do is articulate the same old tired rhetoric, I'm going to be against you. I'm going to give you a bad time, I'm going to give you a hard time, and I'm going to force you right up against a wall. And, you know, I did it literally in 1993 with higher education, with Tom Bartlett. You know, they came in and they said, come in and protect us. I said, Tom, you come in and teach us a class on what you do. You tell us what you're worth and what you're providing to the state of Oregon and how you're going to change and become more innovative and bring market drivers. Literally, it was the same discussion then, into what you do. And by gosh, they did, and they brought proposals back. And that's, I guess, what I'd like to see us ultimately be able to do here in this discussion.
I, Senator Farrelly, Senator Minnis, I couldn't agree more. Let me give one example of a conversation we're having in Clackamas County. Your comment about the gentleman who spoke about the Hispanic population brings it to mind. One of the things that we've determined in conversations within our education community in Clackamas County is that the programs for families that are new to the area, particularly Hispanic families, oftentimes don't reach them because they don't feel like they fit or belong. They feel estranged from the mainstream, and even if there are communications that go out that have been written in their language, that still doesn't solve the issue. One of the things that we're trying to figure out how to put together is an outreach center where the ESD and the school districts can work together to create a means through which families and children can be brought into the education mainstream in a way that make them feel like they belong. In effect, to create an open door for those families to make sure that they understand it's their school system as well as the other folks' school system. And so I think you're right, Senator Minnis. There are needs for us to get outside the box. We cannot continue to do things the way they have always been done. And I think we're really trying to do that. Mm-hmm. And I did not come this morning with kinds of facts and figures that would demonstrate how we've done some of that. So I can only speak with words this morning, but I agree with your concept totally.
Senator Farrelly?
Yes.
And Senator Minnis, I'd like to make one comment. I think it would be very helpful to you. I'm Jerry Bennett. I'm a retired ESD superintendent, school district superintendent for 40 years in Oregon, and serve as kind of a volunteer executive director for the Oregon Association of ESDs. But I would like to address this economy of scale thing that I think the senator is pursuing and is very important to us. I suspect in my 40 years in public education, I know of no other public entity that even can come close to creating the scales economies that regional services does. And it doesn't matter if it's ESDs or any unit that gets together and makes the consortiums and partnerships, and they develop better tools and better delivery models. In ESDs, not only do we have the most scrutinized process for delivering services that I know of, with the resolution service being one, but on those budget committees we have, they're very intense. And we have budget members from each LEA also on our budget committee every year at the final review before we can approve and extend the levy. But the one reason why we have, and a lot of you are familiar perhaps with the Chastain study, it was one of the more extensive studies done about comparable analysis about what can you do with regionals against public or private enterprise. And almost right down the line, it was a comprehensive study, and it had been on this table several times. It demonstrated that the regional concept partnerships created scaled economies that were unmatched. Oftentimes, because of partnerships, you can take a dollar and compound it considerably. The one reason we don't have a lot of competition from the public sector is because they're not in the same type of business. Special education, the universities themselves cannot put out graduates sufficient in a lot of our low-incidence, high-cost students to keep a workforce in place. And ESD has been very innovative in creating teaching, training centers to get these people licensure so we can at least fill some of the gap. There's a big gap in that area. In terms of technology, I believe, Senator, that we're unmatched for being innovative and creative with a very small effort with all the ESDs working together with the Department of Education and Department of Administrative Services. We created, with about $2 million investment, probably $100 million wide area network that serves every school district, every ESD, every classroom in Oregon. We're expanding that now to VTEL and all types of two-way communications, and the state contributes about $2 million to that effort, $2.3 million, I believe. And my effort here is absolutely in line with what the Senator's saying. But I don't know of any other entity that can produce those types of results. Oregon ESDs have general fund budgets that amount to, I'll just round it off, about $200 million. But their all funds exceeds $400 million. And therein lies a key for you. Most LEAs are in the business of teaching, of course. All of them are. And they concentrate that area. And their general funds versus their all funds, there's about a 2% difference. But in ESDs, where we have that ability to go out and create partnerships with the local, state, a lot of county governments work with us, and state governments, and federal, of course, the U.S. Department of Ed. And our all-fund budget of 400-some millions indicates almost 100% increase in the entrepreneurial side of the business. We go out and create contracts, grants, all types of partnerships, and money comes back in, but it always flows back into the LEAs. Now, no other public entity that I know of, any governmental entity, can create those types of economies. And I would like to be in a conversation with anyone on that and demonstrate those, probably hundreds of them. I think there are 240 services, part of them being outside the resolution service, that are done between the school districts, the county governments, and state governments that create these economies. It's a tremendous deal when you can increase 100% on your general fund. Beyond that, and all funds, and put it right back into the business. And so they're parts in technology, special education. When we ran our transporting of goods back and forth to the districts, service delivery, and or printing, and so forth, I mean, we were 4-1 in competition. No one could compete with us, and no one can compete with us in those special ed deliveries because there is no competition. And so I want to keep it clear, and I thought maybe this would be constructive, and I hope it was, and be happy to expand on it another time when you have more time. Thanks for listening to that bit.
Well, I think that is instructive, but again, the sticking point, and it may not be as big as it appears to be, is that the demonstration of the existence of those market forces. I tend to agree with you. I think ESDs grew up on a service delivery basis. They were created for the particular purpose of aggregating demand or providing services school districts couldn't create or provide to themselves. They don't usually build a service they can't sell to the school district, and they have no reason to do that. The question I think that Senator Minnis is after is get in the habit of doing business in a regular and routine and usual and customary way. And I think we're still appropriating money for things in the budget that were first appropriated by Danny Jones in his first day in the legislative session when he got in here 30 years ago. They're still in the roll-up budget. They're still in the cost of services. And I'm not even sure even agencies remembering, you know, why they're in there or what they're doing them for. So the question's real about are we putting that service delivery sieve out there and running everything through there. I think it tends to happen. I think the senator's saying, show me it's happening. You know, and where it isn't happening, that'll be obvious if people are called to scratch and asked to demonstrate it and they can't do it. Senator Beyer.
I'm starting to get lost a little bit in the details. I need to ask Mr. Campbell, because you were sort of on the Financial Committee. With all the discussions we've had, and certainly we've learned a lot more about how you run your business, is the goal still operative to, at some point, some timeline, to reach fiscal or monetary equalization? And I say that assuming that there's probably, I think we've come to an agreement that there is a base level of funding that any district needs to operate, but above that, is that still the goal to hit that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, that was the directive that those of us who were involved from the ESD side had gotten from prior legislative groups, that ESD equalization was in fact its time had come, as it had with K-12. The task force.
I guess I want to redirect you a little
bit. I'm coming.
From your professional, I'm more interested in your professional opinion.
I believe that the state needs to allocate its resources equitably across all children in the state.
Okay. If that is the goal, the task force suggested doing that over 4 years.
That's correct.
Biennium. Within a range of reason, what is a reasonable time? If 4 years is too short, how long is too long to do that?
I'm going to answer with my personal opinion.
I understand. That's what
I believe. 10 years is too long.
Okay.
I believe that my personal belief, again, you asked for, was that 4 years was an appropriate timeline.
You think that's short? That's not too quick to disrupt?
It'll be very disruptive. Here was my take on it, and my colleagues, some of them don't agree with me. I'll just say that right off the top. If Clackamas were going to take a major hit, I'd rather do it in 1 year than four. And I'll tell you why. Because I would rather have the whole issue on the table, sit down with the school districts and determine where do we go from here, come to a conclusion, and then start rebuilding from that point, rather than stair-step down that, for me, would feel like slow death. I'd rather do it in one fell swoop and get it done, and then go on from there. My colleagues don't agree with that. The compromise we thought in the funding committee was a four-year time plan. What I've heard here is that there are people who believe that 4 years is still too short. There's nothing magic about the 4 years. Perhaps 6 years is a better time frame. I asked for personal opinion, so I shared that with you.
That's what I wanted. Thank you very much.
Senator George, hold on. I recognize that you've got some questions asked, but I also recognize that Senator Byers pointed out that it's awfully easy to get meandering in this process and get lost in this bill, but let me try to bring us back to a couple of key points that I think are really critical. And that is, Senate Bill 260 couldn't be passed out of this committee today if we went into work session and voted it out, because it contains a whole bunch of stuff in this draft and this version that were also moved on previously in Senate Bill 259 by Senator Starr's committee. So the bill that we have before us must be amended in some way to pull out all that stuff, and I would hope that the committee would indulge the chair on this. When we have stripped out the stuff that has passed through this body already in 259, this bill drops in volume by a half. So I want the committee members to get the draft in front of them that really reflects what we have left on the table. We've looked at the recommendations from this task force, and essentially they've given us a formula or a formulaic approach to distributing dollars that are available for new money that moves us toward equity. People in this discussion have recognized that there are some anomalies that are built into this system that we can't get around. You've got the grant allow at ESD that's got an antique system. You've got two ESDs that are so tiny that we all have wondered aloud how they can even keep the doors open and provide services, and the task force recommends we bring them up. We've talked about and have gotten some permissions from this community of ESDs that recognizes that some of the districts that are high-funded if you just leave them alone, they're happy. Some of the districts at the top end or above the median are willing to say, well, don't distribute us anymore because that just increases the disequities. Bring the others up so we have an argument that we're moving toward equity. All of those things can be applied. The two issues that I think that are remaining that are contentious issues that the committee needs to deal with is this. Northwestern ESD is still outside of any formula that we can use to make equity because there's such a disparity between the districts, their district, which is roughly the same in population as Multnomah, and they are at polar ends of the spectrum in terms of funding. We're going to have to deal with that issue. That's clearly, you know, one of those anomalies that have popped out, and if we're dealing with those, you have to do something with that. We probably also have to look at Deschutes, which is funded at $123 per student. That causes us maybe to go back and look at a distribution formula that takes some other approach. The other thing that is clear is that some of the members want to see market forces demonstrated, and the recommendation is that the resolution process become universal, or that some other process be demonstrating or be used to demonstrate that market forces are working in ESD funding and contracting and service delivery systems. And I believe, Mr. Campbell, that they are working. We just have to be able, I think, to show that they're working so that the people that come after us who consider service delivery equity issues also understand that people are on a level playing field for the delivery of those services. I think that actually connects in a way to the question that we're asking the task force to go and study. And maybe we resolve that issue not in debate in the committee room, but maybe we ask the task force to help demonstrate or show a mechanism by which market forces could be demonstrated so that public policy people could look at this stuff in the future and see clearly that what we've asked for in terms of market drivers are really features of the landscape and are being actively employed. Those seem to me to be the only two issues, really, that need to be resolved here. And that's assuming that we accept a formula of some kind for the distribution of the dollars for equity. So I guess I'm going to have to ask the committee members, you know, first of all, do you understand that Senate Bill 260, as it exists here in draft, isn't the one that we're going to be moving? Secondly, do you see the formula approach for equity as being the right approach? Third, do we see that there are still some anomalies that we need to deal with? And fourth, are we willing to deal in some way with the market force issue, either by making a recommendation or by requesting more information from the committee?
What is the market force issue?
Demonstrating that either the resolution process is at work in all the ESDs or that there's some other mechanism to show that people are actually using the broadest approach to providing services. We need to be able to demonstrate public money is being spent in an appropriate and efficient manner.
Question.
Senator Breyer.
Do ESDs account for their funding using the same chart of accounts as the common school fund, doesn't it?
That's correct.
So in terms of further research and stuff, we've got a common database that we could get at the service questions.
Mr. Chair, Senator Breyer, that is correct.
Senator Miss?
Well, I was going to say, Mr. Campbell, I like your comment about equalizing in one biennium. Because, and I do, for one reason only, and that is if you did do that, you would soon find out whose ox is being gored or whose ESD is in, you know, going to be in financial dire straits if, you know, if that was to happen. And that's kind of part of the missing equation in this entire discussion here. And on one hand, I keep trying to force this market discussion, which is, doesn't seem to be going very far, and maybe shouldn't, I'm not sure. But at the same time, you know, I guess one of my objectives is that if we did make that choice to do it in 1 year, you might find some market-driven choices that would happen as to whether or not a particular ESD may or may not survive in its present form. And I guess that's part of the ultimate objective in a free market approach, is hopefully there's innovation that would cause people to think or rethink how they're doing things so that, as Washington has done, they have, what, 9 ESDs that serve twice as many students. And I assume that they've done that, and I'm sure they're not perfect, but they've done that because they've made choices about how they're going to deliver based on that approach. And as long as we have 20-some-odd ESDs who are all protecting their turf, we're going to continue to have these discussions, and it's going to, you know, it doesn't make any difference to me what your chart of accounts shows. That's just a form of doing business. I'm really looking for the more ethereal, you know, innovative thinking where people say, well, you know, maybe we don't need a Clackamas ESD, a Multnomah ESD, and, you know, Washington County ESD. Maybe they ought to be working in concert with each other. Maybe it's not just Multnomah ESD we get services from. Maybe we should be contracting with a number of different ones. I guess that's what I'd like to see you guys come back with, and that, so you're not just protecting the, you know, the institutions of those various ESDs, but you're really thinking outside the box. Mr. Chairman, just so you know where I'm going on this thing, I'm going to ultimately end up supporting this proposal with a couple of provisions. One, some language to kind of direct the free market study to see whether, you know, at some point these folks can come back and say, here's what we've done and here's how we've transitioned our existence to try to meet that demand, assuming that that's, you know, viable interest. And second, I'd like to see a sunset in 2 years on this so you do have to come back and re-argue this entire point to see if there are any changes or if we're just simply protecting our turf.
Well, let me suggest that the chair is very sympathetic to some idea of connecting a market driver. And I think there are some elements out there that we could use that are currently being employed. I'd urge the senator to connect with Mr. Campbell and the chair to get the language that we want to propose for the committee to demonstrate that market driver. Correct me if I'm wrong, Steve. We appropriate these dollars 2 years from now. Don't we have to come back and argue the issue anyway? And I'm not at all hostile to the idea of a sunset provision, but hey, this is only going to last for 2 years. And some other poor committee is going to be saddled with this issue again in 2 years, especially if we ask Mr. Campbell's working group to go out and come back. So, and Senator George has been very patient.
Yes, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I was recognized a long time
ago. You were, I'm sorry.
Now, man, he needs my
introduction. He knows where I'm going. That's why he's not doing it. With consideration of 259, and thinking about the effects of 259 and 260, would you support, let me just preface that a little bit. I'm looking through the bill, and I see quite a bit of flexibility for the superintendent to adjust this and adjust that, trying to make sure that this is as fair as possible as we make the adjustment towards equity. With consideration of 259, I'm curious how many out here would prefer just the unamended, pure bill of 260? Apparently nobody does. Okay, got a few.
Somebody pulled a string really late on that one.
Yeah. Free enterprise here.
And I have your opinion, but you there is.
Mr. Chair, Senator George, I've already said that my personal view is that the four-year timeline that was described in Senate Bill 260 is the appropriate one, but I'm also a member of the greater education community, and I don't believe that right now there's enough support for that to pass, and I want something to pass. So I would support some modification of that if that's what it takes to get this moved forward. I'm trying not to be weaselly with my words, but I believe that the plan that came from the Senate, the task force, was an excellent plan. But I also believe that it's more important that the concepts that were embodied there be maintained, and that we find a plan that can be supported by this committee and other legislators.
Did that get you there? Answer the question.
Well, I was going to say, you know, Mr. Chairman, being a farmer and all, I go around a barn and around that barn and around that barn, but you know, pretty soon I come to the conclusion I'm just going around the barn. And I think when I get back there, I keep looking in and I'm saying, well, you know, I thought the task force recommendations were pretty fair from day one. So anyway, that's my commentary for the day.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Garcia.
Yeah, I guess I think that Senator George has just really gotten us to the real focus of what this is all about. I think everybody here agrees that we need to move towards equity. I don't think that that's the argument. The argument is how fast we do it, because there are winners and losers in how we get there. So for every single one of us, it's, you know, how fast do we get there? And we all look at the run for our part of the state, and I noticed even Mr. Chair has his part of the state highlighted on his run.
Well, actually, the ones that are highlighted on my run are the exceptions. The students,
okay,
which is outside Lake, North Central, Kearney, and Grand.
But we each do tend to focus on various parts of the state, and I think that that is where we get stuck, because we all look and say, okay, is my part of the state a winner or loser in this whole equalization plan? And if so, can we all live with that? And so I think it's just for all of us, it's getting to what we can build that support around is how fast we get there. And 4 years, some people are saying 4 years is totally fair. Those who are going to be the big-time losers say, no, it's too fast. Please give us more time. And so I think, you know, it all comes down to how quick do we do this?
Senator,
we're just going to go right down the line here, and everybody's going to get a whack of this, and I'll take my shot too. For me, what I've tried to do is listen very hard to the approaches that the ESD task force brought forward, but also listen to the argument about winners and losers. I think the feature that people may be hopping over on this run is there are no minuses on this. There is no negative here. The bottom line is that we held harmless the folks at all quarters of this thing. We tried to move toward equity. I think the issue is that nobody loses under this thing. It doesn't move, you know, in 1 year, which I'd call the train wreck theory. I would not approach the idea of trying to do this in a year or a biennium. But the main thing is it recognizes that nothing is unfairer than the equal treatment of unequals. You know, that is not equity. There are some of these organizations that have taxed themselves, and the local community have done exactly what we've done in the authorizing local option taxes for people, and they've done it for years. And to flat fund them or take money away from them at this point seems ridiculous. At the other end of the spectrum, there's districts that are side by side, and the differences are over $260, over $160 per student, and that certainly is a picture of disequity. So I guess what I'm trying to do is move us toward equity with a train wreck over a reasonable period of time, knowing that other folks are going to have issues without any minuses on this list. So holding people harmless, I guess, first do no harm is an important feature for me in moving toward equity in ESDs, and that's what this does.
So, Mr. Chair, I guess I would just say that that's exactly what my point was, is how fast do we get to equity? And you're under this plan, it's a slower process to get there.
I guess that's my definition of conservatism. You don't get to talk. So Senator Beyer, and then down the line.
He's just wishing this goes away.
Yeah, him and me both, Mr. Vice Chairman.
Well, my perception on this is, one of the things I hope that would come out over some period of time is a clear definition of purpose for ESDs, because we keep arguing about services and we don't necessarily agree upon or don't know what that is. So if we have in your proposal sort of a task force activity, maybe some focus on that so that we're talking apples to apples, maybe we can. The things that are important to me is equalization at some point. Timeline, as Senator Castile said, it strikes me, just listening to the discussion, the timeline is somewhere between the train wreck, which I agree with the chair, it doesn't make sense to do in 1 year or one biennium, and to me the outside sounds like it's 6 years. I think it's important for a bill that we put out that defines a purpose of reaching fiscal equalization on ADMW basis at some point in time. What that time is, I'm not completely sure. The other recognition is, you know, frankly, I could, from just totally my district's perspective, Senate Bill 260 is just fine because I end up in good shape. Wearing a statewide hat, I am concerned about the smaller districts, and I think that there is, if you're going to have an ESD in a place like Lake County, you probably need a minimum level of service there, and sort of a gut level, that strikes me as that's $1 million for the period of time, and how quickly, I don't think you have to get there in one step, but maybe hitting it over a biennium or that makes some sense to do that. The last thing that I think the task force did a great job on is bringing that resolution process into clear focus, and I think that gets at, realistically gets at Senator Minnis's concerns. I recognize the broad array that he's describing, but I think the reality is when you get down to the bottom line, who's going to make those decisions are the school boards, and they're going to act predominantly on the advice of their CEO that they hire. Mm-hmm. I think that process gets you there, and it should be sort of welded into the fabric of the state constitution. Probably not there, but at least in the statute.
That's kind of where I'm at. So I think coming out of here, if we can have a discussion about what's the timeline, do we want to do equalization? I think the answer is yes. How quickly is the discussion point, and making sure that we get the resolution process and other important features.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Beyer has done a real good job of explaining some of the issues that I have. And Northwest ESD is one of the low-funded districts. It happens to be also a very high growth district with several remote rural schools. So we have many issues, and I believe that we need to be on the track to protect those small rural ESDs, as Senator Beyer has mentioned, but at the same time, move to equity in 4 to 6 years. The issue, I believe, cannot be resolved and hold Multnomah harmless. There's just too many dollars going that direction, and when we're alongside of Multnomah, we're growing so rapidly, and they're, in fact, not growing at all rapidly. We just believe that there's an equity in moving more quickly than has been proposed for equity of services. And this, I believe, we have to protect, and in doing so, we have to make those modifications for the smaller rural ESDs. We still got a job ahead of us, but I believe that we have the will and the opportunity to get there.
Senator Corbin.
Mr. Chair, now that Terry Thompson has left the building, I know that I'm relied upon for the deep intellectual analysis of these kind of issues. And where I come down is this. 4, 16, 31, and 1.
There you go.
You know, I mean, it's a compromise. And I'm with Senator Beyer. We look at this from a parochial standpoint, but I clearly see that the small ESDs need some help, but you know, we should have taken a principle both on the timber tax money and on the this ESD question and put more money in the pot and said that we're not, that the principle is that if we're moving towards equalization that nobody's going to be harmed. So, you know, my feeling would be maybe we can kill, you know, two birds with one stone and put some of the money from the, you know, federal, the timber formula into boosting the smaller ESDs so that the current ones lose nothing. That would be the only alternative solution. But, you know, fundamentally, at the end of the day, the reason we spent 14 damn weeks on 519 and the reason we're spending so much time on this, I was in Harrisburg for a debate this morning, and I looked at the bills when I got in, and I went, thank God. I do think we need to get off the dime, and I think that we just need to have the same principle of adding enough dollars to the pot that we get to equalization without harming the smaller ESDs.
Senator Minnis.
Are you ready for this?
Yeah, fire away.
Well, I'm trying to figure out how we can get to, because obviously I'm the only guy from Multnomah County here, and I think it's a big issue.
That's a huge comfort to Multnomah County.
You know what? Actually, you may think that's a funny comment.
No, I represent.
I'm the only guy they got.
Actually, I represent a sliver of Multnomah County also.
But I mean, a portion of, guess of what I would say is that to the extent that Multnomah County and the school superintendents in that county have not come in here and said anything different, that inherently spells out what I consider to be a problem. They deserve what they get. I mean, and so, you know, in that sense that they're unwilling to defend themselves, it's difficult for me to defend them. But at the same time, in my moral fiber, I recognize that there are significant issues that Multnomah County, the ESD in my district, the Portland Public School District, to the extent that I'm sympathetic with them, because I do think they've got significant problems that they have to deal with, are going to be harmed by this. And I think it's a problem. And I think there's a large number of Democratic members representing Portland school districts. And when they see the numbers in this, I think they're going to have every bit as much passion as Senator Starr's got for his district. So I am the only voice here. But the only thing I can tell them is that all of these superintendents, certified smart, came in here and walked lockstep towards this cliff. It's their choice. And I don't know what to tell them. But one of the solutions that might be here, because I don't mind being somewhat revolutionary in my approaches in this process, because I do think this is a political process for the very reason that you have the ability to speak into these issues, for the very reason you spend 15 or 16 weeks on a subject that some people think should have went through here in 2 hours, because somehow we don't understand what y'all understand. But the point is, it's a political process because we do represent people who have very serious interests in whether or not the ESDs function the way they're supposed to function, whether they carry out the mission that they're supposed to carry out, and whether or not the education system works to the extent that it provides a service that's quality and meaningful to the students that I represent in the 100,000-plus people in my district. That's important to me, and I try to weigh the balances of those things against my own political philosophy here. So one solution is to put a figure larger than $169 million or whatever the figure is in here that the co-chairs have designated, because this comes out of the 5-2 or whatever figure it is, into the bill. So you put a larger figure in here, run it through the formula, send it to Ways and Means, and let them make a choice. Because I don't think that we're necessarily constrained by that figure.
Wait a minute. Just a second.
Did I just blow this up or what?
No, you didn't blow it up.
You blew up your heart.
I regard that as sort of the equal but opposite train wreck. You got one at the low end, one at the high end. I don't think you go off the cliff of putting everything in a year. I don't think you go back to the co-chairs and say, well, we just need 8 or 28 more million dollars.
But see, people don't think unless you challenge them, including us.
Well, here's the challenge of the co-chair or the chairman. What I've been hearing here is equity in 4 years seems like a reasonable approach. I've been hearing that we need still to deal with some of the anomalies, and that anomaly has to include some question of Northwest ESD and Multnomah, along with those that are clearly underfunded to the point of disappearing, and also those that have all taxed themselves to a point where they are pop off the chart in terms of per capita spending. We need to incorporate emphasis on the resolution process, and we need to charge the task force with service equity and gap analysis and to demonstrate that the resolution process is working. That seems to me not to be a hard place to go for all of us. The only question that I keep coming back to is one that maybe can be answered. When you polled the members of the ESD community, they offered an approach that was a different approach than the chair took, and it had to do with slight reductions at the top end of the funding chart. Perhaps you could share with the committee what those discussions were and who participated.
Senator Farioli and committee members, I'll just make a quick stab at that. As we saw the deliberations here proceeding, and with so many difficulties at each end of the spectrum, it was fairly obvious that we had to make some modification to get resolution, which led us to that compromise discussion. Our position as an association and working with the funding coalition, which is all of the school districts, we've been absolutely focused on the importance of 95-5 on the percentage of the split of dollars and how we really tie all K-12 education and ESDs together. The 90%, 10%, 90 toward resolution has become common place for us, and we're saying we can deal with that. Some have more difficulty than others, depending on size and how they run their operation. We really have been strong about the volunteer merger concept. We believe ultimately some will happen because it may be more enterprising, better scale economy for them, and it will happen because I think your wisdom on that has been good, as was the task force. We strongly feel that the resolution program needs to be pushed and advertised and much more documented about its effectiveness. the cost efficiencies are amazing, and I think I'm, you ought to all be proud, and I am, about how effective it is, because it's been under scrutiny every single biennium that I can remember in my 40 years in the business, and it has survived every single, in fact, it gets stronger every time. And I think maybe that's one of the things that will help us here, that driving question that you're saying, let's get more accountability, let's demonstrate more, and we will, and I think we just get stronger every time we do that. We really like to see this thing in a two-biennium process, because 2 years, we're just, bam, we're right back into soup again, and study and analysis takes quite a bit of time, and I just hate, I'm getting too old to do this every year, and so I'd like a little bit of in-between time to be a little more intellectual about the process, but...
We could do term limits.
Yeah, I should have been out a long time ago. Thank you, Senator. But in the final position that Senator Farioli asked about, how did we as a organization start modifying our position slightly from the coalition and the task force? I believe that it is very severe, the equity, if you try to do it too quickly. Granted, and they're large and small ESDs at the top, at the other side of Maine. It's not just large Multnomah, it's also a Harney, and it's a South Coast that is probably as close to bankrupt as you can get, and they look like they're rich, but yet they are rolling back unbelievable. So when you look at that, and we have other at the other end wants to also increase their product and delivery. So we believe this effort that has that you made in the last 4 weeks, it keeps showing progress toward how do we get compromise and support full-blown. I believe that we will have more support if we show a slight move to increased equity. And that was the concept you just mentioned, Senator, about a little bit off the top to help enhance even further the lower ones. I'm not talking about a large chunk, because it gets too severe and it changes program too drastically in a two-year period of time, but a modest shift from what you've already done and the things you've already really taken well account of, that a modest shift, 2% up and down, will change the numbers considerably. And it does show, as it does respond to the coalition and the task force, saying we're even making more effort. And yes, the ones above the mean have to suck it up a little bit more, tighten the belt a little bit more, because flat funding is not a gain, that's a loss. When you're flat funded with energy and staff and safety and all those other costs piling on, flat funding is not hold harmless. That is a loss. But the ones below deserve some recognition, and I believe our organization will ultimately support you with a modest shift, just a modest shift to a little more equity, and we will do everything we can to support that and try to let you people go on to other business. And thank you for the opportunity to say that.
Colleagues, what I want you to understand is that what's being recommended here is that we revisit those above the mean with a 2% reduction.
That moves away from the hold harmless approach that the chair's tried to bring to this issue, but it also recognizes that if we don't do some more equity adjustments, we're probably not going to come to closure here. I don't think that moves us away from recognizing that there is a list of anomalies. And there are. That if we try to take a formulaic approach to the anomalies, it just simply will not work. It doesn't relieve of the obligation of doing something for those districts that are so funded at such a low level that their existence is threatened. But within that context, if we were to take the recommendation, or at least the notion that a 2% adjustment at those above the mean would be applied to the greatest level of disequity left after all the adjustments that we've currently discussed are made, that might get us to a place where we could deal with the anomaly at our Northwest ESD, possibly the one that is also pretty glaring at Deschutes ESD, and help them move toward equity. And if we do that, that possibly gets us to a place where we can solve the problem and move forward toward equity in a four-year period. And colleagues, if I have consensus to do that, what I will do is request...
Define equity.
Yeah, let me try to do that. To accept the task force recommendations to move toward equity in 4 years.
To or toward?
Toward.
I guess I could say, too, I mean, the fact of the matter is we're only going to be able to bind the process for 2 years. We're going to take a 2-year step toward a 4-year process. So the next legislature may be seated and have a completely different attitude toward this thing. So I'm going to say toward. But it should be very clearly demonstrated the intent was to get to equity in 4 years. And I hope that answers your question. To deal with the anomalies that we've discussed that our grant will allow at North Central, Lake Kearney, also Northwestern Deschutes, we have this to the anomalous list. That we incorporate the resolution process, we charge the task force with a definition of service equity and gap analysis, that we ask them to more clearly explain and demonstrate that the 90-10 resolution process is working and it's out there and that other agencies and institutions ought to incorporate that, but that we also look at a 2% adjustment for those above the mean to help us with the equity issue. I'd like to ask the committee for permission to get those amendments drafted. And of course, I would welcome the help of any of the members who would like to help with those amendments.
Question, in your language, the toward equity, does that assume if we're going to do it in 4 years, 4 school budget years, is that 25% a year to close the gap?
Well, I'll leave that to Steve. The issue is we've tried to do this on a budgetary issue as a percentage of budget, and we've tried to look at it as an ADMW, and then I've tried to make it easy on the staff to come up with something they could explain. So if you do it on a total budget amount and then you make all sorts of adjustments, it just looks like you're arbitrarily sprinkling money over a budget. If you do it on an ADMW basis, at least you've got a formula, and if you haven't...
Well, I'm assuming an ADMW basis. And does that take into consideration any idea of minimum funding level for ESD?
Yeah, it has to deal with the two at the bottom level. Yeah. Are you talking about the $1 million?
Yeah, I have to say, Mr. I'm a little perplexed with the comment on the South Coast, and I don't challenge that at all, but one of the things as hard as I'm setting, and I recognize the difference in students, we've got Lake operating on a little over half $1 million a year for a long time, and making it, but needing more, and I think the South Coast is looking at about $5.4 million and having trouble. And I don't disagree with that, but I think it gets to the problem of, you know, what are ESD supposed to do? And
well, let me fact that
they are locally controlled and do what is perceived as most important in their communities.
Well, let me first thank the speaker for bringing the South Coast issue to bear.
But nice to shift this.
But isn't the point that every one of the ESDs is to a certain extent having some difficulties with dealing with the service delivery packages?
Mr. Chair, maybe I just make a comment that the ESDs that are over the past biennium have been flat funded have all, of course, either had expenditure of unbalance or have reduced programs simply because the cost of doing business doesn't stay flat. So I can speak personally about that. So there has been that has occurred already. And it's because also there are different expectations that have been created over time about what services would be delivered at no cost to schools that now comes into conflict with a reduction in revenue. So whether it be South Coast or Multnomah or Clackamas or wherever, flat funding means that some things have to change. And that's what Mr. Bennett was addressing on the South Coast issue.
But Mr. Chairman?
Senator?
Mr. Campbell, on that very point, I mean, I assume Multnomah ESD is going to have to ask that question of the school districts that I represent in Portland, who obviously are suffering from some significant budget shortfalls already, and isn't that going to exacerbate those problems?
Senator Menace, it likely will. The problem, I'll make one more comment about the approach that the subcommittee on funding tried to use. We truly tried to get away from what exists now and ask the question, how should the state's resources be allocated? If you were going to start from zero, kind of a zero-based budgeting concept, you're going to start from zero how would you allocate the resources? And our concept was that we would allocate those resources on a model that said take into account both K-12 and ESDs as a whole, and determine if there are mitigating circumstances that need to be addressed in that funding, do it. Sparse population, large geographic region, high concentration of high cost, low incidence young people. Those things need to be built in some way because those are mitigating factors. But then the question becomes, how should the state's resources be used in support of all the children in Oregon? So we came to a conclusion that they ought to be within the set of mitigating factors, then they ought to be distributed equally on behalf of each child. And the problem we had then was that for those ESDs that have been higher, that there is a train wreck, so to speak, to come down too quickly, and different people have different views about how they want to accommodate that. So we created the four-year timeline for that purpose. But our question was, if you start from zero, if you don't pay attention to the past, how would you allocate the resources? And we came up with the plan that you've seen.
But, Mr. Chairman, again, it kind of gets back to my whole point. It's like robbing Peter to pay Paul. Either you reduce services that you're currently providing, or you sell off some of your fixed costs. I'm thinking of the Multnomah ESD. What I don't know is, when you reduce them down to these levels, can that figure sustain even bond payments on capital construction? Will it sustain lease payments that are already due, contracts that are already entered into? I don't know what the effects of those things are. To the extent that you ratchet them down, is there any money left for any kind of service whatsoever, or are we just trying to pay down the debt on existing capital construction projects and leases? That's part of the equation that I really don't know. So if that's true, and I have a sneaking suspicion that it is, that what's going to have to happen is they're going to have to go to the districts that I represent, again, in Portland, and say, you're going to have to help us. So it's going to be a cost shift to that other larger portion of the ADMW.
Sure.
So there, and so that amount of money that's going to go to the classrooms is going to be affected significantly. So which gets me all the way back to my very first statement about running the money through the formula, but I'm not going to start that all over again.
All right. Well, I think,
appreciate the comment,
Senator. I think what we got here is if the committee is okay with the direction that I just essentially recapped for the committee, what'll happen is that we'll invest in a rewrite of Senate Bill 260, because the bill really needs complete rewrite and redistribution to committee members. We'll do the runs for the 01, 02, and 03, 04, so people will see exactly what's going to go in the out years, right? And then we'll come and then we'll come back as a committee, but I guess I'm really not willing to do that unless I have broad consensus that what we talked about is doable.
Mr. Chairman, that's fine with me, but I would like to have those runs shared with the superintendents in my school district,
sure,
and the ESD people in my district, and I'd like to have some reasonable explanation to the question of what does this do to you? How are you going to function and operate, and what kind of choices and decisions are you going to have to make? Because I think that the larger delegation from Multnomah County, I think, needs to consider that when we ultimately...
Well, put it this way, when those runs are available, if we distributed them to Mr. Campbell and others, could we get guarantees that all the members of the associations, working groups, would get them?
Senator Farrelly, perhaps our best deal, we'd develop a representative team that would, so you wouldn't have to listen to 21 ESDs, but we would have a representative geographic-type team that could explain that succinctly as possible.
I want it from my ESD.
Well, they will be certainly one of the key representatives because they're one of the big payers.
We'll make it available to all.
Rope the others in charge.
Yeah. We'll have all the trimmings.
Senator Beyer and then other members.
I think you're going in a good way, Mr. Chair, but I would suggest before you put LC through a lot of rewriting, it might be easier just to throw the motion out. Do the runs first and do the principles of runs.
And I guess the only...
I don't know how much rewriting it takes to do that. I know there's some fix-up.
Well, here's the consideration that I have. We're supposed to have all of our Senate bills heard and moved by the 27th.
Oh, he was just kidding, Mr. Chair.
No, he wouldn't have kidding. No, really.
No, so, I know he wants out of here.
So with, you know,
didn't say what year.
And the point is, we don't have a meeting tomorrow, but the legislative fiscal is already fairly heavily burdened.
Let's just get the runs out as quick as we can. The question is, I think the delay doesn't serve anybody. I would, if I have consensus from the group, I'd get the bill drafted. And even if they have to make minor modifications later, you're at least looking at a semi-final or a final version of the bill.
Okay.
Ma'am?
I think we should follow up on Senator Menace's idea to find some more money to put in this formula.
Darn Democrats.
Senator George.
My hope is that in the changes that we're suggesting here, that doesn't in fact blow the coalition that brought the whole concept of equalization in.
Well, I hope it doesn't. I don't think it will. We tried to be pretty responsive to the coalition's issues. There's still an element, and I think the coalition has recognized that there is a comparison between ESDs across the state. You just can't treat them all the same. And I think that's an important breakthrough for us. The other thing, 259 has moved forward, and I think that removes a lot of the contentious. Now the question is, how do we get to equity? And I really appreciate the help of the committee, and I will ask these amendments to be created and the runs to be run and distributed. Colleagues, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 260. I'm going to open the work session. Colleagues, Senate Bill 622 is no more. The need for 622 was demonstrated to be achievable through administrative change. Therefore, we will never see that little bill again before this committee. We will close the work session on Senate Bill 622. Senate Bill 499 is held over to Friday until Thursday of the following week. Work session on Senate Bill 499 is closed. And that brings our committee to a closure for today. And we will happily meet again here Monday morning at 10 minutes after 8 at 7:79.
We should meet at
Wait a minute. Eight. Hold on.
Yeah.
499. Hold on.
There you go with the
jump. Open a work session on 479. Senate Bill 479 is held over. I guess till the earliest Monday. We'll schedule 479 for Monday. Close the work session on Senate Bill 479, and we are in adjournment until Monday morning at 8:10.